You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. And it's Friday, so it's time for Brunch with Bernie, our national town hall meeting with the guy I think of as America's senator. People in Vermont know he's theirs. I'm very proud of it, Senator Bernie Sanders. Bernie, welcome.
Good to be with you, Tom.
Great to have you. There's a lot in the news. Immigration, student loans, global warming, minimum wage. Wow.
There is a lot in the news. Let me start off with the immigration bill, which is, I think, an 1,100-page bill, which clearly has some very, very important provisions that are long overdue and need to be implemented. We cannot continue to leave 11 million people living in the shadows. They are being exploited, and when they are being exploited as workers, every worker is being exploited. If people are working below the minimum wage, not getting basic legal rights, other people are impacted as well, and it's part of a race to the bottom. So I think giving those people a long path, I should tell you, to citizenship is a step forward and the right thing to do. DREAM Act. Making sure that those kids born in the United States can get their rights is a very, very important. Strengthening the border, I think, is important. And there are other provisions in there which make sense. The major area that I have had trouble with is the guest worker program. And this program is being pushed by all of corporate America and the high-tech companies. And it comes in two variations, two parts. Number one, the high-tech companies are pushing for a very significant expansion of what's called the H-1B program, which will bring high-tech workers from around the world into the United States in significantly greater numbers. And the other program is for entry-level workers. There are a number of guest worker programs there. H-2B program is largest, and you've got the J-1 program, which brings college students from around the world into entry-level jobs in the United States. So the issue that we have got to ask ourselves is at a time when real unemployment is close to 14%, when youth unemployment is a lot higher than that, when unemployment among minorities is way higher than all of that, do we really want to be bringing in hundreds and hundreds of thousands of foreign workers to take jobs that American workers desperately need? And that is the question. So I think there are some examples where, especially for high-tech companies, they may not be able to get the workers that they need, and they have to go abroad, and that makes sense to me. But I think in many, many instances, the high-tech companies are exaggerating their problem. I think there are American workers available for those jobs in most cases, and I think one of the goals of these high-tech employers is to bring in foreign labor at lower wages than they would have to pay American workers. What I ended up doing as part of the immigration bill, and I ended up voting for it, I got a provision, one of the more important amendments in the process, was for $1.5 billion for youth programs, youth employment programs, for the next 2 years. And that would be about 400,000 jobs for kids 18 to 24. And I did that to address two issues. Number one, with the cost of college education going off the roof here. Very, very expensive. A lot of kids need that extra money, summer money, to help pay for college. I worked when I went to college. Millions of people worked when they went to college to earn some extra money. And I do not want to see kids not be able to get those jobs. Second of all, and equally important, you got a lot of kids who are not going to go to college. That's the way it is. They graduated high school. They dropped out of high school. They need entry-level work. They need jobs. As waiters, as waitresses, as security people, as ski instructors, whatever it may be, kitchen help. There are a lot of jobs out there, which are not going to make you a fortune, but at least get you into the labor market, and allow you to have the opportunity to move on up the ladder. I worry very much, Tom, that there are many young people in this country who graduate high school, they don't get a job after 1 year, they don't get a job after 2 years, they don't get a job after 3 years. You know what? Those young people may never get a job in their lives. And they're going to hang out on street corners, and they're going to do drugs, and they're going to do self-destructive activity. They're going to end up in jail. So I think it makes a lot more sense for us to help those young people get entry-level jobs, earn income, learn, develop their job skills. So we've got a program as part of the immigration bill for 400,000 jobs for young people in the next 2 years. So that's my take on the immigration bill. Some very good stuff in there, some not so good stuff, and that's the role that I try to play in improving it. When we talk about student the cost of college, I think many people are aware that in a couple of days, the subsidized Stafford loan program, and that's the major federal loan program, will go up from 3.4% to 6.8%. And that's a disaster. Right now, we have student loan in this country is over $1 trillion. That's more than credit card loans. The average student graduates college with about a $27,200 loan. Obviously, that's the average, so many graduate more with heavier loans. If you go to graduate school, go to medical school, dental school, I talked to a couple of young people last year, dentists in the state of Vermont. They had loans, debts of over $200,000 having graduated dental school. So this is a huge issue which impacts students and their families. It impacts whether what kind of jobs they're going to get. It impacts, in some cases, where they're going to live, whether they're going to get married and have kids. Because if you're paying off 25% of your income in paying off your debt, that really puts handcuffs and limits what you can do with your life. So the goal has got to be, the immediate goal that we're working on, is to keep rates at 3.4%. And there will be a vote on that. We're taking the July 4th week off. We come back, there will be a vote the following week to maintain 3.4%. And then we have to come up with a long-term solution, which we can talk about later. But the bottom line is, if we believe in our young people, if we believe that education is important, we've got to make college education affordable, and you have to have student loans that people can afford. So that's an issue that is very significant. You mentioned earlier, I think, that we've had some important Supreme Court decisions. Back in, I think it was 96, I voted against DOMA, the so-called Defense of Marriage Act. The Supreme Court overturned that decision, making it unconstitutional, ruling that it was unconstitutional. And what it means appropriately is that gay married couples will be entitled to the same federal benefits as everybody else. And I think that's a step forward for civil rights and for justice. And that's a very positive step. On the other hand, last week the Supreme Court made a very bad ruling in terms of overturning sections of the Voting Rights Act. What we have known for a long time is there are states in this country that want to make it more difficult for minorities, for lower-income people to participate in the political process. And these are conservative Republicans in many cases, who do not think that low-income people are going to vote for them. And their strategy has been to try to disenfranchise them, make it difficult for those folks to vote. If they did that in the past, and those states or communities, not just in the South, by the way, if they had a record of discrimination, those voting rights laws had to be reviewed by the federal government, Department of Justice, to see if they were continuing a pattern of discrimination. Supreme Court overturned that provision. Ball is now in Congress's court. We've got to act on it. I think we will act on it in the Senate. It remains to be seen whether the House will act appropriately. Bottom line here is that in the United States of America, we want to encourage, not discourage, people to participate in the political process. So that's a little bit of what went on in Washington this last week.
That's a lie, actually. Senator Bernie Sanders with us. It's our Brunch with Bernie hour. He's taking your calls at our national town hall meeting, Brunch with Bernie, here on the Tom Harbin program. Check out his website over at sanders.senate.gov.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Over at sanders.senate.gov, you can sign up for the Bernie Buzz, Bernie's regular newsletter that keeps you up to date on what's going on. Plus, the website itself is a great news source. Defending America from the weapons of mass deception. Tom Hartman here with you. It's our Brunch with Bernie. Our Senator Bernie Sanders on the line with us taking your calls. Janet in Mount Vernon, Washington, watching Free Speech TV. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
thank you so much, Tom. And Senator Sanders, thank you for everything that you do for this country. I feel like you are the only one in there that actually cares about, you know, the common person. My question has to do with Edward Snowden, and I know that he is, you know, in the news, on the corporate news, kind of in almost an eye roll sort of situation. I think this is very, very serious. I mean, I feel like I'm having to get my news from RT TV, which is basically Russian television, to get, you know, the real coverage of what is going on, and that he's being, I think he's got some documents that while they are going to be, to hurt the U.S., this country has turned into a massive bully. The U.S., I mean, no one wants to help us. Ecuador has now rescinded their trade agreement. You know, it's almost as if the goodwill we have spent, it is spent, it is gone. No one cares anymore. And so is there anyone, I feel like you are the only one out there, you cannot do this on your own. Is there anyone else out there that really, pardon my French, gives a damn about what is going on and this whole national security debacle?
Well, there are a lot of issues out there, Janet, and I do want to tell you something. I share your concerns about the media in general, and do know that there are a lot of people out there who are fighting as hard as they can in the House and in the Senate for middle-class people, for working people. They do not necessarily get on television every night. They may not be the best-known politicians in the world, but I want you to know that there are serious people out there who work very long and hard hours defending working Americans. Now, let's talk about Snowden, and let's talk about this whole NSA business. What Snowden told us and revealed is that every telephone call, I imagine the telephone calls that come into this show, are being filed by the United States government in a huge bank, and that the file will include when you made the phone call and the phone number that you called, among other things. We also learned that the government has the capability of going into the websites that we visit and tracking us in other ways. And the issue comes down to, in my view, Janet, a very simple issue. Do we want to protect this country from terrorism? We do. And I think that's a serious issue. Can we do it in a way that does not undermine basic constitutional rights and the privacy of the American people? And I absolutely believe we can do that. We can protect this country without violating the Fourth Amendment, among other things. So what I am doing right now and working with a number of other people is language on an amendment which will deal with the USA Patriot, which I have consistently voted against. And what it says, it will prevent the government from having this blanket capability of tracking every bloody phone call made in the United States of America and more. And what it will say, which is very simple, which is what the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution is about, is that if the government has reason to believe that a person is involved in terrorism, they go to the court and they say, Judge, the A, B, and C reasons we think this guy is involved in terrorism, he's working with these people. Judge looks at the evidence, says, you make a case, go get him. That is a very different approach than tracking every telephone call made in the United States of America. Very different approach. So we want to narrow the criteria by which the government can do what they do. And that's the simple explanation of it. I suspect you'll have that debate when the Defense Authorization Act comes before Congress. But I can tell you that in Vermont, and I think all over this country, there is a lot of concern. How do you go about calling yourself a free nation? We believe in liberty. Oh, it's okay, though, that the government knows every phone call that I make, or the government knows what websites I visit. And then, by the way, Janet, this is not just a government issue. Technology has far outpaced legislation in terms of protecting our privacy from the private sector. If you think there's somebody out there who doesn't know the prescription drugs that you're taking, what you purchase, the books that you read, who doesn't have a pretty good profile on you, you'd be mistaken. And that information can often in the private sector be sold. So it's not just a government issue. It is a government issue, but it's a private sector issue. It's a privacy issue. And that issue is how in this era, when technology is exploding, can we retain the privacy, our own privacy as American citizens, and not have people know every bloody thing that we do and see and read? and that's the issue.
Mike in Saline, Michigan. Hey, Mike, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hey. It's an honor to talk to you guys. I mean, it's fantastic. Senators, they should somehow clone you. But anyway, what I'd like to see is Democrats or whoever get a voter ID going for everybody, okay? Get a campaign to get a photo ID for everybody that so they can vote. And there's no excuses. We should have a campaign out to get everybody. There's no excuses for these guys. Take away that.
Okay, Mike, that's a good, Mike raises an interest. I think what Mike is saying is, in a sense, take the Republicans' challenge and take the right-wing challenge and say, okay, you need a voter ID? Good. Go get people voter IDs and motivate them and get them involved in the process. That's an interesting concept. I myself think, I think that's a good idea, but I think that I very strongly resent these states and governors and legislatures really going out of their way to make it harder for people to vote. Voter fraud. If somebody commits voter fraud, if they vote twice, three times in an election, that is a serious crime which should receive serious punishment because that attacks our democratic foundation. On the other hand, when you have people who are not really trying to address the voter fraud issue, but are really, and everybody knows this, going out of their way to make it harder for poor people, people who don't have cars, people who find it difficult to have transportation, to participate in the political process, that's something that has to be fought.
Senator Bernie Sanders with us. It's our Brunch with Bernie hour, taking your calls in our nationwide town hall meeting. Be sure to check out Bernie's website at sanders.senate.gov. It's a great news website. In addition, you can sign up for his Bernie Buzz, his newsletter, and there's always some petition, all kinds of stuff going on. Check it out.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Also, we have a free app over in the App Store, the Tom Hartman Program app. Just plug in Tom Hartman, and it'll get you to it. It runs on both the iPhone and the iPad. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And it's our Brunch with Bernie hour. Senator Bernie Sanders on the line with us. And, oh, by the way, welcome back to our newest Tom Hartman Program Pacifica radio affiliate, KYRS, on the dial at 88.1 FM and 92.3 FM in Medical Lake, Washington. So, Bernie, you're there, right?
I am right here.
Okay. Archie in Yucca Valley, California, you are on the air, Senator Sanders.
Hi, Senator Sanders. If Ed Snowden is charged with some sort of espionage, who is his company working, spying on, but us, the American people? Then David Gregory got on Meet the Press and asked Glenn Greenwald, should reporters be charged with aiding and abetting whistleblowers? That's outrageous. Tom keeps asking the question, who's watching the watchers? It's supposed to be our Congress, holders of Justice Department, the press, and people like Ellsberg, Snowden, Manning, and many more. My compound question for you, Senator, is does Snowden deserve bail when he's rendered home? What do you think of David Gregory's scary question? And was Clapper, I think his name is James Clapper, under oath when he committed perjury? Thank you so much, Senator.
Well, let me just answer your question about David Gregory, which I think was a totally inappropriate response. I mean, you can go further and not only talk about this particular journalist, but talk about the Washington Post and the Guardian and attack them as well for being treasonous and committing a crime, which is obviously totally absurd. Look, here is the issue. The issue is that as a result of technology, not only our government, but the government of the UK, and I suspect governments all over the world, now have the capability to gather an enormous amount of information on their own people. In our country, I think that many of these activities are unconstitutional, certainly in violation of the Fourth Amendment. And I think the Congress has got to rise up and say no to this. Now, what's interesting to me is you have some conservatives. You know, conservatives talk about small government. Well, if you talk about small government and you talk about getting government off the back of the people and you talk about liberty, you cannot be intellectually consistent and say, yeah, I don't have a problem with the government accumulating every phone call made in the United States of America and doing other things. Unfortunately, you have people like John Boehner and other conservatives in the House who day after day tell us how much they dislike Medicare and Medicaid, all of these terrible government programs. They apparently think it's okay to have a government program which tabulates, files every phone call made in America, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So conservatives have got to get their act together. Either you believe in big government or you don't believe in big government. I myself do not believe that the government should be doing these things. And as I said earlier, I think we have to be aggressive in going after terrorism, but you do not have to have this kind of blanket file on virtually everybody in America.
Kevin in Eugene, Oregon. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Did you say Kevin?
Yes, sir.
Hi. Look, my question is really, isn't it not the government that is collecting this information? Isn't it a private contractor? And the whole notion that what I keep thinking is, where did this whole idea that everything that is important to this country is outsourced and privatized and corporatized, where does this stop? How did this begin and where does this stop? I remember several years ago, I heard that the military wasn't making their own meals anymore. The whole notion of a mess hall was out of line. I think I really wonder why we're talking about the government collecting this information. It seems like the Carlyle Group is collecting this information, and the government is paying for it.
Well, yes and no. I mean, the answer is obviously Booz Allen is a private company contracting with the United States government. At the end of the day, it's the United States government which is paying the bills and determining what should happen or should not happen. You raise a separate issue, which is a very important issue, not only with regard to the NSA, but many other branches of government, and that is the degree to which we are contracting out. The theory of contracting out is that you save money by going to the private sector. I think what we have learned in recent years is that is not the case. Not only do you open yourself up to situations like the Booz Allen situation and Snowden in the case of the NSA, but in many other areas, it turns out that these private contractors do not have the level of accountability that they should, and are making money hand over fist. And so I think that whole issue of addressing accountability, I remember, I think I've told this story to you, Tom, I was in Iraq, I was in Afghanistan a few years ago, driving in an armored vehicle with two guys. One worked for the U.S. military, was in the Army, and one was a private contractor. And the private contractor guy doing the same exact work as the other fellow was making substantially more money. I think that is a very discouraging thing, demoralizing thing for people in the military to know that people doing similar work are making far more than they are. It is an issue that we have to take a hard look at.
Corky in Hilton, New York. You are on the air. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV on the DirecTV satellite system. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Yeah, I want to know why I got to pay $33 billion for border security. Why can't the corporations or companies that are hiring these illegals, why don't they pay huge fines for hiring somebody who's undocumented in this country? Then you don't need the border security.
Okay, well, yeah. you raised a couple of good issues. Let me just say this. First of all, you're not going to be paying for that. The money that is going to pay for border security, for the jobs program, is going to come out of fees that are being assessed on employers who are bringing guest workers into this country. Furthermore, it will be assessed on people who are moving towards citizenship who are paying back taxes and fines. So the government will initially come up with the money, but it'll be repaid in that way. I think the point, though, that you make about employers knowingly hiring illegal folks in this country illegally is a good one. And I think that you would not have, ever have had, millions and millions of people coming into this country who come for one reason. That is to find jobs and to make a living and to do better than they're doing back home. And they come into this country and they get jobs. And I suspect that 9 out of 10 times, the employers who hire them know exactly what their status is and are taking advantage of them, paying them less than the prevailing wage, maybe in some cases, certainly in some cases, less than the minimum wage. So when we talk about people coming over the border acting illegally, it is true, but it also should be understood that you have never, never would have had this, the scope of this problem, if the government was going after those employers who are hiring folks illegally. And I have not the slightest doubt that the government quite intentionally turned a blind eye, we're talking about years and years ago, pre-Bush, turned a blind eye to the situation because it enabled employers to get cheap labor. And why bother with that? So that's where we are there.
Yep. Henry in Osceola, Arkansas, listening on SiriusXM Satellite Radio. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Yes, sir. I have a question for you, Senator, and I hope you're having a good day today. But my question is, do you think the Congress or the Senate is going to have enough guts to do anything about the Voters Act, you know, that Supreme Court pretty much put a bullet in this past week? And because I think that this is a serious situation, because we already know these Republican governors and stuff are already redistricting their districts where it's going to be unfair and one-sided. And it shouldn't be that way. And
Henry, this is what I think. Thanks for your question. It is a very, very important issue. And I think what the Supreme Court has done is aided and abetted many of these conservative governors and legislatures who are going to make it as hard, who want to make it as hard as they can, A, for people to vote and to create districts and so forth, which are also working to their advantage in illegal ways. What I think will happen, to answer your question, is I think the Senate will act pretty quickly on that. It remains to be seen whether the House will act. And here's what's very interesting, Henry, about this whole business. If my memory is correct, it was as recently as 2006, or somewhere around that time, where the entire Voting Rights Act was reauthorized. In other words, there was virtually no debate, no dissension in the Congress. Congress thought it was a reasonable approach. And then you have the other day the Supreme Court saying, despite the fact that Congress had reauthorized it, no debate, bipartisan, the Supreme Court says we're going to take out the major provision and give states the right to get back into the discrimination business. So it is an outrage, and it is something I believe the Senate will take up shortly and I think address. Whether the House will or not remains to be seen.
You know, even we just have a few seconds here, Bernie. Jim Sensenbrenner called for this in the House, a very right-wing Republican. Do you think that's a good sign?
Yeah, it's a very good sign. Sensenbrenner used to be chairman of the Judiciary Committee in the House, so that is a good sign.
Yeah, okay. Senator Bernie Sanders with us. It's our Brunch with Bernie hour, taking your calls in our national town hall meeting, Brunch with Bernie. Be sure to check out Bernie's website over at sanders.senate.gov. It's a great resource. We'll be back with more of your calls for Bernie right afterwards.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Sanders.Senate.gov, Bernie's website. TomHartman.com, ours. You can drop into our live free chat room and say hi. It's your media support group for We the People, the place where despair is not an option, the Tom Hartman Program, and our Brunch with Bernie hour. Senator Bernie Sanders on the line with us. And Bernie, we had a caller during the break who asked what's being done to end Nixon's drug war, basically.
Well, I think certainly at the state level, more than the federal level, there is progress being made for a variety of reasons, not all of them the most thoughtful, one of them having to do with the fact that as states are broke, they can't afford to keep nonviolent offenders behind bars. It's a very expensive proposition. But also what you're seeing is in states like Colorado, Vermont, and elsewhere, there is serious debate on this issue and legislation now, which begins to ask the question, do we keep people behind bars for possessing or selling small amounts of marijuana, for example? So I think James is right. This is a huge issue. A lot of lives have been destroyed. People behind bars who should not be behind bars at great cost to the people of this country, incarcerating so many folks. It is worthy of a lot more discussion than it has. But to answer James' question, I think you are seeing some serious discussion and some action in various state legislatures.
Bobby in Denver, Colorado, listening on Denver's Progressive Voice AM 760. You're on the air, Senator Sanders.
Yes, sir. Senator, how serious is the problem that you always hear about groups of congressmen that are just plain anti-Obama, and that's why stuff's not getting done?
Bobby, I think that is a serious problem. I mean, I think you have within the Republican world a movement, very significant movement toward the right, so that you have today right-wing extremists controlling the House of Representatives, and we have some of them in the Senate. And some of these guys believe that the minimum wage, I was just at a hearing the other day with not even one of the more conservative Republicans who said, you know what, I believe that we should do away with the minimum wage. We don't need the minimum wage anymore. And you got other guys who believe that Social Security is unconstitutional, Medicare, health programs for the federal government are unconstitutional. So you got all of that. And then on top of that, I think that certainly you have a particular bitterness toward Obama. I think race is a factor in there. And certainly that's true nationally. The kind of antipathy that we have seen toward him is unparalleled, at least in my lifetime, toward a president. People can disagree with him, but the kind of hatred that we have seen, the kind of claiming that he wasn't born in America, shouldn't be, is not qualified to be president, that's just pretty fundamental hatred. And that filters on up to the Congress.
Dave in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
I appreciate you guys taking my call and giving me the opportunity, Tom, to speak with the senator. I am a technology professional, and earlier you were mentioning one of the issues is the laws not keeping up with technology. One of the areas I find that to be the most true is in the field of augmented reality and near-field communication. Most of the software systems that are developed for this, 90% of them come from overseas, and with the apps that are released, there is no government control over that. There's just Google and Apple deciding on what they're going to let you put into their marketplace or not. I would like to know how we're going to get the laws to catch up with the technology.
Well, thank you for that thought. As I mentioned earlier, that's exactly my concern. We are living in an age now where technology has the capability of just knowing an enormous amount about our private lives. Not only the phone calls that we make or the websites that we visit, but the medicine that we take, the books that we read, television programs that we watch, et cetera, et cetera. It is a huge issue, and I have to tell you very honestly, I don't think Congress has gotten to first base yet in addressing this real threat to the freedoms and privacy and constitutional rights of the American people. So it is an issue. There's a committee in the Congress that is assigned to deal with this, but we have a long way to go.
Yeah. Martha in Carrboro, North Carolina, watching Free Speech TV on Dish TV Satellite Network. You're on the air, Senator Sanders.
Hi, this is Martha Warner. Can you hear me?
Loud and clear.
Okay. Well, I am a displaced Vermonter living here in North Carolina. I taught school at Champlain Valley Union High School for 30 years. So I voted for you when I lived there. So now you know who I am. And my question is, okay, first I have to say, I think our system is broken. I really do. I think we need some constitutional amendments that will first, you know, give us an amendment that ensures the right to vote for each citizen in the United States. I do not believe that Republicans could win a national election except for the fact that, you know, if they.
Martha, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but we just have about a minute and a half left in this hour. So could you make a real quick question?
I wonder, do you know, are there any studies that show what are the best ways to, successfully get an amendment to the Constitution through?
Okay. Well, Martha, you raise a very important question. And I'm not sure that you need a constitutional amendment here. What I will tell you is that in countries where working people have a lot more benefits and a lot higher standard of living than we do, not surprisingly, the voter turnout is higher. We had the ambassador to Denmark here a few weeks ago, and in that country, which has health care for all, free college education, incredible parental leave benefits, et cetera, their voter turnout was 89%.
Wow.
And a level of political consciousness which is much, much higher than we have. So the question is, I think Martha made a good point, will people, when you have a lot of low-income and working people who want health care, who want decent-paying jobs, who want to make sure that their kids can get a college education, when those people are not involved in the political process, and when the big money interest as a result of Citizens United are now able to put huge amounts of money into campaigns, what you have is, and I think this is Martha's point, a very, very distorted election system. Working people don't vote. Rich people buy elections. And that is an issue, obviously, that needs to change. And that requires an enormous amount of organizing and educational work.
Bernie, thanks so much for being with us today.
Okay, thank you, Tom. Thank you.
Great having you with us. It's our Brunch with Bernie Hour. Check out Bernie's website at sanders.senate.gov.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Happy Anything Goes Friday. Boy, is it thunderstorming here in Washington, D.C. Okay, I just got a call from Louise. I wanted to wait until after Bernie was done to share this with you. But Higgins is okay. She's calling me from the cat hospital. This is so incredible. Okay, first of all, we don't know what's wrong with him. They in a couple hours, they'll get the blood test back. They think he either has a kidney problem or a thyroid problem. But for the last week, he's been barfing a lot and losing weight and you know, meowing constantly. And he's getting to be an old cat. I mean, he's like, you know, 14, 15 years old. But so, you know, Louise took him to the vet today. And here's the funny part. Here he is. He's weak. I mean, he's really weak, and he's getting old. I mean, he's gray around his muzzle and whatnot, and around his mouth. And he's been much more of a kind of laid-back cat lately. People come over to the house, and it's been at least a year since he's attacked anybody. But she takes him to the vet's place, and he's lunging against the side of the little cat carrier that she's got, and he's totally flipped out. And the vet says, okay, let's see what we can get some blood out. And Louise is like, yeah, be careful. And the vet is like, oh, I do this for a living. Don't worry about it. And Louise is like, yeah, that's what the last vet said. And he actually ended up with bad scratches on his hands and his arms and had to go get medical treatment himself. And the vet is like, ah, don't worry. This is not. Tries to take Higgins out of the cat carrier. Wham! Down goes the vet. So they had to put him back in the cat carrier and take him into the back room and, like, gas him or something. You know, they literally had to knock him out in order to draw blood out of him. And so he was, for the whole last hour, he was back in the back room at the vet's office. And now Louise said he's just kind of sitting there looking like, whoa, Paisley. It's like he just doesn't, he's very stoned. But they said that all his blood tests, you know, everything looked normal. So they're figuring that it's like one of those things. I'll keep you up to date on it. So, but that's, we've been, yeah, who's taking whose blood, Jim says. Higgins is very good at taking vets' blood, I'll tell you. He's been doing it for a long time. So, anyhow, that's my Higgins news. The North Carolina House Democratic Caucus. This is, whoa. The emergency alert system just went off. Flash flood. This is my phone doing this. Flash flood warning. This area until 6 p.m. EDT. Avoid flood areas. Okay. I live in a river. Does that count? Yeah. Fortunately, as Ronald Reagan told us, when the tide rises, all boats are lifted. Key is you got to have a boat. Okay. Boy, was that strange. That's the first time my phone has ever done that. Jim's just did it, too. Okay, Shane, it's your turn next. And Danielle? All right. Anyhow, the North Carolina House Democratic Caucus. House Republicans, they just sent this email out. Cheryl Bruce, the finance director at the NC. In North Carolina, they're doing this Moral Monday thing. I mean, there's just a lot of amazing stuff going on in North Carolina, the state that has been basically taken over by a right-wing billionaire and his right-wing buddies. And they say House Republicans are currently carrying out a full-scale attack on middle-class families in North Carolina. By the way, if you think this is just a North Carolina problem, you're wrong. If it's not already in your state, as it is in Michigan, Ohio, Indiana, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, if it's not already in your state, Florida, Texas, if it's not already in your state, it's coming. Alabama, Mississippi. Anyhow, House Republicans are currently carrying out a full-scale attack on middle-class families in North Carolina. They are pushing a tax reform plan, right, reform, isn't that such a sweet word, that gives huge tax breaks to corporations and the wealthiest individuals in the state while increasing taxes on the middle-class and working families. Yes, of course, that's what Republicans do. Ronald Reagan doubled the payroll tax on people making under $40,000 a year and cut the tax on millionaires and billionaires down to one-third of what it used to be. This is what Republicans do. You'd think after 32 years of their doing it, people would have figured it out. But no, for some reason, people keep voting for them. I can understand somebody who's got six or seven or eight or nine figures after their annual income or their net worth voting Republican. I can't understand somebody who makes less than $150,000 or under, you know, frankly, less than $1 million a year voting Republican. Because even if you're one of the lucky few who's making over $100,000 a year, you're still living on the edge in this economy with these Republicans. And that edge is, you know, scary near, given everything that they're trying to do to this economy. Anyhow, they're doing that. Their budget slashes, this is back to the North Carolina Dems. The website, by the way, if you want to communicate with them, is NCDP, as in North Carolina Democratic Party, ncdp.org. The House Republican budget slashes public education at every level while spending nearly $100 million on vouchers for private schools. Under the Republican plan, our classrooms will be more crowded, our teachers will have one of the lowest average salaries in the nation, and our children will have a harder time graduating ready to compete in the global economy. Just this week, the Republicans passed a new law that will require public school teachers to teach misinformation about abortion to seventh grade students. As crazy as that sounds, it just adds to the list of dangerous and harmful legislation Republicans have pushed through this year. That list will include allowing guns in bars and on college campuses, firing thousands of teachers' assistants from our children's classrooms, refusing to expand Medicaid to 500,000 North Carolinians in need of quality health care, cutting proved job creation programs, and more. The list, sadly, just goes on and on. It's just incredible. NCDP, North Carolina Democratic Party, .org is their website if you want to check it out and help out the Democrats in North Carolina to fight back. You know, send them $25 or whatever and say, yeah, I'm with you. I understand what's going on. There's a great thread, by the way, over at the Center for American Progress's blog, thinkprogress.org, that has all these pictures from this week's Moral Monday going on in North Carolina. And it's just amazing. I think we're seeing the early stages of an American spring. Just like in the other countries, people are like over it with dictators and mullahs and all this kind of stuff. I think in America we're over it with the Reich. And their right-wing religious crazies that associate themselves with them. So, John in Port Isabel, Texas. Hey, John, thanks for listening to Sirius Satellite Radio. What's up?
Thanks for having me. I'm actually in the Washington, D.C. area right now.
You are?
Just drove through some hail.
The storm got you.
Has anybody ever asked a question of who else Booz Allen worked for? Who else did they have contracts? Or is that a?
They have contracts with the Air Force, the Army, the Navy, the CIA, the State Department. I read a list on the air a couple days ago. 99% of their income comes from the federal government. And they've got contracts with virtually all or most. I think there's over 20 different security agencies, spy agencies in various departments. You know, there's the Army Department of Intelligence and the Air Force Department of Intelligence and whatnot. They work for all of them or for most of them.
Not any private concerns or other countries?
I don't think so. I think that they just take our taxpayer money. And then the profit that they get from that, they give to the Carlyle Group, which is in part, which owns a majority of them. And the Carlyle Group, of course, is owned in part by the Bin Laden family of Saudi Arabia. Yes, that Bin Laden family. So it should raise some interesting questions. Just imagine if the UAW was owned in part by the Bin Laden family, if the AFL-CIO was owned in part by the Bin Laden family, Darrell Issa would be holding hearings right now. But Booz Allen Hamilton and the Carlyle Group, oh, no, they're just fine. You know, George Herbert Walker Bush brought the Bin Ladens into the Carlyle Group. It's fine.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
There's no droids in that car. Just let them go on by. We're going to talk about the IRS instead. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And George in our Arvada, Colorado, listening on AM 760. George, what's on your mind today?
Hi, good afternoon, Tom. Great show. A word about Bernie. I didn't have a comment or a question for him, but Bernie Sanders, mm-hmm. used to live in Vermont. I love that. It's the most beautiful state in the nation.
It is.
He's the best thing that happened to Vermont since sliced bread.
Yeah, Louise and I lived there for about a decade, and it's a beautiful, beautiful state.
My question for you, I was listening, and I couldn't be more in agreement with your exploration of solitary confinement. It's not rehabilitative. It's the most horrible thing you can do. It's inhumane, and it's inhuman.
Solitary confinement is torture. Let's call it what it is. People who have been in solitary confinement almost always show symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder, among other things. It is torture.
Absolutely. But I didn't hear your solution to the thing, Tom, in this regard. What do you do with somebody who is a danger to other prisoners? That's what I don't understand.
Yeah. Well, you can separate a person without putting them in solitary confinement. And the way that you do that is you have jail cells that are contiguous, you know, where one cell is right next to the cell next to it, and cells, so that people can at least communicate with each other. Solitary confinement is isolative. It isolates people. It's, you know, they talk about putting people in the hole. They put them in rooms where they literally can't talk with anybody except the guard. And for people who are in solitary confinement, typically the guards will not talk to them. It's part of the psychological torture, and it should be outlawed in the United States. Because it does more damage than good. It's used as punishment, and you know, as a way of punishing people for misbehaving or for, you know, fighting back against guards or whatever. It may work as punishment. It may scare some people, but it does so much damage to people that it should be outlawed. George, thanks for the call. Roger in Los Angeles. Hey, Roger. Thanks for listening over at TomHartman.com. What's up?
Hey, Tom, how are you?
Fine.
Hey, I actually attended the last Exodus International conference.
Mm-hmm.
And
wait a minute, Exodus International, the pray away the gay group, the convert people from gay to straight? Okay.
Correct.
And this is the group that just collapsed 2 weeks ago when the leader, he wasn't the founder, although he claims to have been, the leader of the group came out and said, okay, you know, I kind of like guys, and I apologize to everybody for all the damage I did to people, although I'm going to stay with my wife, is what he said, basically.
Yeah, correct. And, you know, I went mostly just to be a fly on the wall, and sort of, you know, because I was fascinated with the subject matter, and it was definitely fascinating. He's starting a new organization. I forget what it was called. He announced that on the first night. And it's going to focus on bridging homosexuals with churches in a more sort of loving and accepting community. The cynical part of me suspects that's because there's no longer necessarily money in gay conversion therapy, and these sort of their numbers have, I guess, gone down in attendance at the conference. So that's what the cynical part of me says.
I think you may be right.
It was very interesting to be there, and it was also very sad in a way. Some of the speakers, while some, you know, really lauded the, you know, that they had same-sex attractions and that they overcame them and stayed with their wives, and their wives got up to speak with them, and they talked about their, you know, and some of them were very happy. And, you know, as we all know, there's probably a spectrum of homosexuality, and, you know, some can probably kind of toe that line where, you know, they can do that, but...
Or they're sort of functionally bisexual.
Yeah.
I wonder about that. I wonder if that might be the consequence of basically just being in the closet so long. It's almost a Stockholm syndrome kind of thing. And it sounds to me like what he's starting now is more of a support group for gay men who are in the closet and have decided to you know, and who married as a way of being in the closet, and who have decided to stay with their wives. They're good friends, and now they're dealing with the fact that maybe they didn't need to do all that. You know, it's like society has changed enough that... Go ahead.
Yeah, and those couples definitely did, you know, appear to have come to the realization that, like, hey, we can deal with this. So almost like a heterosexual couple where the male and the female are both attracted to other people, but they don't act on it.
Right.
Because they love each other and they want to be together. One of the saddest stories was a couple, Rob and Linda Robertson, whose presentation is on YouTube already. They had a son who came out to them when he was 12. And they were a very religious family. And while they were very accepting of him being gay, they said, you know, but you know how God feels about this. And from when he was, I think, about 12, 18, their son, you know, really, really tried and got into, you know, scripture and trying to not be gay. And the parents were very supportive. And but he did eventually, you know, get into drugs, and he ended up overdosing and dying, I think, at 20. And,
you know, that's the group that is the most at highest risk for suicide in the United States is gay teenagers.
Yeah, and I think that was probably one of the most important messages of the conference, is that no matter how accepting and careful you think you might, and this was their message, the parents. They said, you know, we thought we were doing the right thing. We were being supportive. We were trying to help our son. And, you know, what we didn't realize is that we were teaching him to, you know, hate this one thing about himself. And we didn't realize how ingrained that was with him. And it would taught him to hate this thing about himself. It taught him to hate himself. And while they were very loving, that couldn't be separated. And I think that was a super important message, because, of course, now they have this, you know, tragedy that can't be undone.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that was a very important message for really the whole country. If, you know, if people watch that on YouTube, I think they'll be moved by it.
I agree. You know, and I think that there's a lot more of this than we realize. I asked Dr. Paul, what's his last name? The guy who's in charge of the Family Research Council. And, you know, I asked him, do you think that you're really secretly gay? And, you know, and he basically refused to answer the question because Paul Cameron. Because it's like, who wakes up in the morning every day thinking about gay people? Except somebody who's gay.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Which makes me wonder about Marcus Bachmann. You know, Michelle Bachmann, yesterday she said she was threatened by the Supreme Court's decision. Really? Occupying the media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. Tom Hartman here with you. Anything Goes Friday. Just a couple of quick headlines for you. North Carolina becomes the first state to disqualify itself for federal unemployment funds. That from rawstory.com. Yeah, I read you earlier a report from the North Carolina Democratic Party, ncdp.org. That's incredible. The North Carolina legislature and the governor just cut unemployment benefits down to the point that they no longer qualify for federal matching benefits. And so 400,000 North Carolinians who are unemployed, who are looking for work, who would have qualified for federal extended benefits, are going to see their checks either slashed radically or vanish altogether starting in about a week. What's it going to take to get people in the streets? Well, people in North Carolina are already starting to get in the streets. These Moral Monday protests, they're growing. They're huge. Keep an eye on this. This is the American Spring. We saw an American Spring in Wisconsin pushing back against Scott Walker. I think, frankly, we saw an American Spring with the election of Barack Obama. Ohio 12-year-old kills self after fatally shooting 9-year-old half-brother. These are the kind of only in America stories. Woman jailed for late night water purchase after anti-sexual assault rally. Mayor Bloomberg. Oh, isn't this great? He says, yeah, we got this stop and frisk thing. And yeah, you know, 87% of the people who get stopped and frisked are people of color. But proportionally, we're stopping too many white people. Yeah, he really said that on a radio interview. And I don't think it was a mistake. I think, you know, he thought he had, he said, if you look at the proportions of crime, blah, 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 blah. Really? Amazing. Margie in Wisconsin Rapids, Wisconsin. Hey, Margie, what's up?
Hey, first of all, best wishes to Higgins.
Thank you.
I would like to bring up two Supreme Court decisions that nobody's talking about.
Okay.
The first one is Vance v. Ball State University, which addressed is sexual harassment. It changes the definition of supervisor to one that can significantly change your employment status, i.e. the person that can hire and fire you, which is not necessarily your quote-unquote supervisor.
Right. And the reason that they did this was to make it harder for people who are sexually harassed in the workplace to claim that that sexual harassment was in the context of a power relationship, which put the harassee at the in a vulnerable position relative to the harasser.
Exactly. And in fact, Ruth Bader Ginsburg gave two examples, one being a secretary whose supervisor is harassing her, but HR is the one that makes hiring and firing decisions.
Right.
And the second one being truck drivers, a female and male, where the male is the senior driver, and that male is not her supervisor. She has no recourse.
Right.
The other decision that nobody seems to be interested in is University of Texas Southwest Medical Center versus NASA, which redefines some of the discrimination issues. If you are fired and claim discrimination, it has to be the sole cause of the employer's action. It cannot be a mixed cause. So they can make up anything that you might have done that nobody else would have been fired for and consider that, well, that was part of the decision.
Which makes it almost impossible for people to successfully sue for discrimination. Let me throw another one into the min of the mix, Margie. I don't have the name of the case in front of me, but the Supreme Court ruled last week in a case that involved the generic drugs. And there was a generic drug let me give us a preface to this. When brand name drug manufacturers discover that there is a significant side effect, you know, after the product's been on the market for a year or two, and sometimes it takes 5-10 years for real side effects to come, you know, to become obvious, when they discover that there's a significant side effect, they are required by law to publish that, to put it on, you know, in fact, you've got over 50 drugs just in the last year that have had black labels, you know, these what are called black box labels, you know, warnings, this drug may cause suicide or, you know, the risk of death kind of labeling. And so that's the case with brand name drugs. But once a drug goes generic, they're no longer required to label them that way. And so there was a generic NSAID drug. NSAIDs are non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, NSAID drugs. They include things like the ones that we're all familiar with are things like aspirin, Tylenol, Advil, naproxen, I think it's called Aleve. These are the non-prescription NSAIDs. And there are some prescription NSAIDs. I think Celebrex is one of them. It's heavily advertised on television. I don't remember all the names of all the other ones, but there's a bunch of them out there. And There was an NSAID generic drug that the manufacturer knew one of the side effects was something called something like Steven Johnson syndrome. It's like it's a name after a very waspy name person. And the side effect was that the woman who took this drug, you literally, your skin burns from the inside out. She took the drug, and 60% of her body suffered second and third degree burns. The skin blistered and bubbled and boiled and cracked. And then after that, the skin calcifies. The skin becomes basically a crust permanently. And it wasn't just her skin. It was her eyes. She is now permanently blind as a consequence of this. She sued the drug manufacturer saying that they knew of this risk. She took this drug, by the way, because she had a sore shoulder. I'm sitting here with my arm in a sling right now because my shoulder is sore. And, you know, thinking, okay, my doctor could have prescribed that for me. I mean, you know, it was not included that this was one of the side effects in the prescribing information. And so she sued the drug manufacturer and said, you know, you should have told me. And the Supreme Court said, no, they don't have to tell you. So yeah, there's a piece in the, Margie, thank you for bringing this up. There's a whole bunch of these. There's an article in today's New York Times about how Justice Roberts, John Roberts is very slowly and gradually, but absolutely irresistibly, step by step, moving this court to the hard right and moving America back into a Dickensian world, deciding on behalf of the Chamber of Commerce over and over and over and over. Of course, he was a $2 million a year corporate lawyer before he was put on the bench. As, you know, was the case with most of the Republican appointees on the bench, that they were corporate lawyers before they got there. So corporate America is getting stronger and stronger and stronger as a result of Supreme Court decisions. Another decision that said that, you know, you can't file class action lawsuits, or it made it much harder to file class action lawsuits. It was a couple of weeks ago. So the Supreme Court is doing some really, 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 really nasty stuff. And this is the problem. People say, oh, you know, George W. Bush, yeah, so he stole an election, big deal, you know. Al Gore, you know, actually won in 2000, and John Kerry actually won in 2004. But, you know, how much damage could he do other than a war and a few hundred thousand dead people? Well, he did literally a generation's worth of damage by putting John Roberts and Sam Alito on the bench. This is damage. I mean, John Roberts is only 58 years old right now. This is damage that is going to last probably throughout most of my children's lifetime. And that damage, because these decisions establish precedent, that damage is probably going to last through, you know, knock on wood if we ever have any, my grandchildren's and great-grandchildren's lifetimes. So we'll see where this all goes. Brian in Denver, listening on AM 760. Hey, Brian, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I'm afraid I'm so far off topic.
There is no topic today. It's Anything Goes Friday. Whatever you want to talk about is fine.
Okay, good. I have been looking at, with some concern about privacy issues from a little bit different angle, mm-hmm. on Brett's Facebook and things like Google. I had a YouTube account before they were bought out. YouTube account.
Oh, okay.
Before I had, right. Google's, had to have Google's ownership involved and another social networking site.
Right.
And one concern I have with the privacy concerns is I don't know how it works with safe haven laws and two other countries mentioned, but I'm pretty sure a company doing social networking, well, other people in my circles who are local, involve, even the invite might involve an overlapping concern with a buddy who's also running a venue that's governed by Title III if Google thinks they're exempt from being that, based in California.
Governed by Title III, what does that mean?
Title III of the ADA, I'm sorry. I always say Title III, I forget, not everybody thinks so much about
Americans
the ADA.
With Disabilities Act.
Right, I'm concerned that what's necessary to mention I have an access issue or there's distress,
right,
has to do it all on a public forum. Because if I try anything short of getting their attention by buying one of their other products, right, so that I have somebody with involved in the charge, like a dispute resolution that was part of my credit card.
Right.
I can't make them talk.
Right.
That seems like the best strategy, and you got to have the funds to do that.
Yeah. Well, this is the problem, Brian. In America today, big corporations, whether they're social media corporations or pharmaceutical companies or whatever, you know, your cable provider, they've got so much power that the little guy basically has no recourse. Thank you for the call. I mean, the Supreme Court should be standing up for us.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Instead of standing up for us, the Supreme Court says, oh, you want to try and, you know, get a whole bunch of people together and do class action laws? You can't do that. Sorry, that would be too hard on the big corporations. Let's check in with the Talk Radio News Service and find out what's going on in the world. This Talk Radio News Service report brought to you by the magic of Hungary at the Smithsonian Folklife Festival. You can learn more about the Hungary program with the Hungarian Heritage Roots to Revival app at folklife.hu. Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. Hey, Victoria.
Hey, Tom.
So what's up in the world today?
The Obama administration announced final rules today on Obamacare's birth control coverage mandate.
And?
Well, they don't in a huge way alter the mandate, which says most employers have to cover a range of birth control methods in their health plans without charging a copay or a deductible. And there have been 60 lawsuits about this, which have sort of pitted the government against religious groups who don't want to cover contraception. But what the DHS said today is the final rules simplify the process by which employers of religiously affiliated institutions will be able to get contraceptive coverage. Now, employees, yeah.
Okay.
It doesn't sound very simple to me, but this is how they say it. Under the final rule, self-insured religious groups will notify their plan administrator about their objection to covering birth control. The administrator will notify policyholders about their separate eligibility for birth control services. And insurance companies enlisted to provide contraception under these accommodations will get a rebate from the federal government to offset the cost. So, in theory, everybody should be happy. The U.S.
Let me translate this into what I think is plain English.
Yeah.
The people who work for these religious organizations will still get their birth control pills covered by their health insurance company.
Correct.
But the cost of that insurance, that fraction of the cost of the insurance, which covers the birth control portion of it, will not be paid by the religious organization. So they're not paying, they're not being forced to pay to allow to have their employees have birth control. That fraction of the cost will be paid for by the federal government.
Exactly.
Okay.
Now, the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops says they're still being required to cover illicit birth control.
They just don't want their employees to have access to this, period.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah.
Even if the
federal government pays for it.
Yeah, that's the only religious organization that I've heard a comment from so far.
Yeah.
Now, what is not addressed in this is the class of organizations that's really raging at the moment, and that's the for-profit businesses that are religious. Hobby Lobby, for example,
right,
which is involved in a massive lawsuit against the federal government.
Right, and they're asserting that but the majority of their stockholders have a religious concern about this.
Not only the majority of their stockholders, they run their business on religious lines. They close on Sunday, they do this, they do this. They run their business as how they define a Christian organization, and they say that they should not have to do this because it is against their Christian principles.
Hmm.
And they are involved in a major lawsuit with the government, and they're a very big business, and they're going to fight this all the way. And at the moment, things look like they're going quite well for them in that lawsuit.
Yeah, I saw that.
So that's an interesting one. So that's going on. In terms of immigration, there really isn't any immigration news because there's nothing happening. There's just people talking. There's no actual news.
Well, clarify something for me here. My take on the Hastert rule is that it's a de facto filibuster. basically, in the House of Representatives, this rule that Denny Hastert came up when he was Speaker of the House was that if he can't get a majority of Republicans, the Constitution says a majority of members of the House of Representatives have to agree on something for it to become a law. But the Speaker has the ability to prevent anything from coming to the floor itself. So it's kind of a one-man filibuster. If the majority of Republicans don't agree with something coming to the floor for a vote, then he will not bring it forward to the floor for a vote. And this is what John Boehner is saying about the immigration law, is that he can't get a majority of the Republicans to say, yes, bring it forward for a vote, even though if all the Democrats in the House voted for it and another 40 or 50 Republicans, a very small minority, it would become law. So you have a majority of members of the House of Representatives who would vote yes for this. But Boehner is not going to give them the opportunity. It's a one-man filibuster. Do I have that right?
You do have that right. That's exactly what he's saying. And there are some representatives, Republicans, who are saying they want to actually sort of codify the Hastert rule and have it written as a real rule. And there are other conservative reps. Matt Salmon of Arizona is one, but he's just one, who are saying Boehner is going to lose his job unless he does this. There are several who are threatening him, and they're going around.
Unless he follows the Hastert rule.
Exactly, saying right. He will be out.
Right. So the right-wing crazies are running the asylum. They have taken over control of the House of Representatives. And has John Boehner broken the Hastert rule so far in the last 6 years?
Yes, he has on several occasions. Fiscal cliff.
Yeah.
Sandy.
Yep. Okay.
And there was one other one that he broke it on, which is escaping me. But yeah. I think there were three occasions on which he's broken the Hastert rule, and it's driving them nuts.
Right, because they want to be able to have a filibuster in the House. Whereas the founders, the framers of the Constitution, thought the House is the closest to the people. Every seat is elected every 2 years. And so it should run by a simple majority, very straightforward. Well, actually, the founders didn't put a filibuster into the Constitution either. Interesting. Okay. End of rant. Next.
John Kerry, Secretary of State, is in the Middle East to try and get the Palestinian peace talks going. He wants to get them heated up, and he wants to get them going before September when the UN General Assembly will debate the Middle East. This is massive shuttle diplomacy. I mean, he's been to Israel twice in the last 24 hours. He's been there like five times in just a few weeks. He met Shimon Peres, Benjamin Netanyahu, and Mahmoud Abbas all today. He's got more meetings tomorrow. He's very clear. He wants the strategy is not just to begin new talks, but to position the negotiations to make progress on core issues.
If that could be done, it would have such a positive impact on the Middle East and the rest of the world. Wow. Okay, Victoria, let's wish him well. Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service. Thank you, Victoria.
Thank you.
Brought to you by the magic of Hungary at the Smithsonian Folklife Festival, folklife.hu.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to Anything Goes Friday. Quick recap of what's going on today. The Senate has passed the so-called Comprehensive Immigration Bill. I call it the Texas-Arizona Welfare Bill. It's like, let's take $40 billion and just drop it into the laps of Jan Brewer and Rick Perry. Some of it would go to New Mexico and California, although the California border is already fairly well militarized, as is much of the New Mexico border. But in particular, Rick Perry and Jan Brewer would just get this pile of this wad of cash. And I would bet anything that $40 billion is not going to go to hire government employees. It's going to go to hire private contractors to do security services along the border and to build an East Berlin-style wall. Now, I used to live, part of the year, just a couple hundred feet in other parts of the year within 40, 50 miles of the East German border. I remember waking up in the morning in the springtime in Hochheim, Germany. Literally, our property abutted the border. The backyard was a 20-foot-tall barbed wire, razor wire, electrified fence, two of them, with a sand cordon in between them, with guys walking with dogs on the inside. And on the outside, which was still East German land, even though you could walk right onto it from West Germany, there were landmines. And so all along the way, there were these signs, you know, warning, landmines. Grenze, the border. And I remember in the morning as the ground was thawing from the winter and the spring and the sun was coming up, the landmines going off. Boom! Wake you up really fast at 6 o'clock in the morning, hear a landmine go off in your backyard. This is what we're going to do? We're going to become East Germany? Oh, and but, you know, at least the East Germans were giving the money to their own employees. You know, we're going to give the money to some big transnational corporation that's probably owned by the Carlyle Group and the Bin Laden family. Oh, and lest you fail to have noticed, Congress adjourned. John Boehner just gaveled out the House of Representatives without fixing the student loan problem. So student loans are going to rise from 3.4 to 6.8%. They're going to double next week, July 1st. Isn't that sweet? You know anybody who's got a student loan? Good luck. Got a problem with that? Call John Boehner or Eric Cantor or Mitch McConnell over on the Senate side. Because Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi very much wanted to do something about this. So we'll see where this goes. Anyhow, there's a lot going on around the world. The Trayvon Martin trial is continuing. We'll get Debbie Hines on next Monday and give you or early next week. And this is very much worth following and keeping track of, just if nothing else, as a barometer of the status of racial relations in the United States. Can you imagine if the story of what happened was white teenager goes to 7-Eleven, buys a bag of Skittles and a can of iced tea, puts it in the pocket of his hoodie. He's walking home, and a black guy with a gun starts following him. And regardless of what happened and who hit whom first or whatever, regardless of that, the white kid with the armed with the candy, the Skittles, and the iced tea ends up dead, and the black guy ends up running around with a gun in his hand. I mean, it would have been case closed. That black guy with the gun would have been in jail so fast, there would be no big scandal. There'd be no nationwide trial. There'd be no, oh, stand my ground. And John Roberts and Clarence Thomas want to say, oh, America is a very different country than it was in 1965. As my friend Joe Madison said on this program on Monday, Jim Crow is alive and well. He just doesn't go by that name. He's now James Crow, ESQ, Esquire. So anyhow, it being anything goes Friday, let's get your thoughts. Sam in Point Pleasant, West Virginia. How you doing, my friend?
Can I address you today as just Tom instead of Professor Hartman?
Certainly.
Okay.
Always
I don't know about this. You know, the Republicans, they seem like they are regressive, not progressive. Like Professor said the other day on your show.
Yeah, I think Joe Madison had it right. Yeah.
And, you know, I think Republicans getting into their psychic or something, I think they're jealous because, Democrats had the first, like presidents and Republicans didn't. Maybe.
Could be. Who knows?
But, you know, I got a cat named Tiger. And it sounds like you got a cat named Higgins. It's blessed with really good owners, you and Louise, you know.
Yeah.
15 years old, that's a long time for a cat.
Yeah, it is. And he was he's a little nutty. He was our son rescued him from a frat house where they had locked him into a room with a pit bull for when he was a kitten. And he would sit in the bathroom, and the only water he could get was the faucet in the shower. The shower head dribbled. And to this day, I mean, yesterday, I'm taking a shower. I get out of the shower, and here's Higgins sitting here, you know, going, meow, 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 meow. I open the shower. He jumps in the shower, and he stands there with his mouth open waiting for me to turn the water on so it can spray down in his face because that's his favorite way to get a drink. It's amazing. Yeah. And he will, and all he had to eat was potato chips and pizza. And to this day, anybody brings pizza or potato chips into our house, Higgins is on it. You cannot. The only way you can keep it away from him is to lock it in another room. So anyhow, what'd you call about, Sam?
Well, I just called to make that comment about the Republicans. You know,
Seems
like they don't want to get no work done. You know,
yeah.
Move on with whoever you know's leading the executive branch. You know, we got to get something done.
Yeah.
I mean, they D.W. Bush.
Yeah, they don't want to get anything done because they don't want Barack Obama to get credit for anything good happening in the United States, which means that nothing good can happen in the United States, which means that the Republican Party is fundamentally anti-American. And that's been the message ever since Reagan, is America is bad. America is not the solution to problems. America is the source of problems. You know, Reagan said that in his inaugural speech or his first You got the clip, Shano. Here it is.
In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
Yeah, America is not the solution to our problems. America is the cause of our problems. Here in the country, around the world, doesn't matter. America bad. That's the Republican message. And I don't see how these guys can even call themselves patriots.
I got it. I don't either.
Yeah, they got a lot of. Whatever. Sam, thanks a lot for the call. A lot of chutzpah. It's not even chutzpah. It is a fundamentally incoherent message. How do you say that you hate our government, that you hate America, and claim to be the most patriotic flag-waving people in the country? How do you pull that off? They've been doing this for 32 years. How do you pull that off and have people believe you? I don't get it. 15 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Maybe you pull it off by saying, government is the problem, and look out, there's a black person over there. Oh, there's a gay person over there. Oh, God, maybe a Muslim over there. That's how you do it. Talk media for the sane among us. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. John, whoops, hang on just a minute here. Hit the wrong button. John, in New York City, listening to WWRL, you don't like my use of Reagan's clip? Really?
Well, you said that Republicans, and then you used President Reagan as an example, think that America is the problem.
Yep.
Stated that several times.
The American government. I'm guessing that they would prefer, the Republicans would prefer the Chinese government because they have basically turned us over to the Chinese government. When Nancy Pelosi passed legislation out of the House of Representatives with majority Democratic support during the first 2 years of the Obama administration, that said that no longer can American companies tear down factories here like Mitt Romney did with Sensata back just a year or so ago and ship them brick by brick over to China and rebuild them there and get a tax break. No, we're not going to stop them from doing it. We're just going to stop them from getting a tax break for doing it. That legislation passed. The Republicans filibustered it in the Senate, and so it never became law. So I guess that Republicans prefer the Chinese governmental style to the American governmental style. Do I have that right?
Well, sir, I'm no fan of the Republicans or the Democrats. I think their policies are virtually indistinguishable. You look at the
more and more Republicans are saying that, you know, John.
Well, like I said, I'm not a Republican or a Democrat, but I just can't believe that you would say that saying that our government is a problem, which I think obviously it is the same as saying that America is the problem. And you also had a caller on, and I think you agreed with him, that said a lot of the criticism of Obama is due to racism. I'm a black American. I have no use for Obama, and it's got nothing to do with racism.
Yeah. Well, that's fine. That's fine in your case. I guarantee you, there are a lot of white racists in this country, and I've run across no small number of them whose opposition to Obama is based on his race.
There's so many reasons to dislike Obama that I think it's very difficult to pin it on racism. And then finally, sir, if I may,
I'm saying some significant fraction of it is
brought up. I think there's no evidence that Zimmerman did anything wrong. There's no evidence. You guys mentioned Skittles.
He got an unarmed guy dead. He did nothing wrong? You got two guys who meet. One of them has a gun. The other doesn't. The guy who doesn't have the gun is dead. And you don't think that the guy who had the gun, who, by the way, was told by the police, do not follow that man, did something wrong?
Your example, sir, your example was if a white person had been followed by a black person, and then incredibly you said, no matter what happened, I don't know who hit who or whatever,
yep.
That's the entire crux of the matter.
No.
If someone is defending themselves against being attacked, whether they have a gun or not, they have a right to defend themselves.
The pursuit is an attack.
That's what the evidence points to with George Zimmerman.
The pursuit, in my opinion, was an attack in and of itself.
The what was an attack?
George Zimmerman pursuing Trayvon Martin. The 9/11 operator told him, do not do that. The community watch guidelines are, do not do that. This is something to be left to the police. And by the way, what's a community watch guy running around with a gun for anyway? But no, I think that most sane Americans, John, which is not to say that you're insane, but most Americans would tell you, I mean, just look at who's on death row in this country, would tell you that when whites commit crimes against blacks, they're far more likely to go to prison. Excuse me. When blacks commit crimes against whites, they're far more likely to go to prison than when whites commit crimes against blacks.
And
the statistics, absolutely back that up.
Your proof of that is the demographic in prison, that there are more blacks in prison?
No, my proof of that is the analyses that have been done by any number of groups, including the NAACP, that show that take actual crime statistics, actual reported assaults, and you take actual reported assaults and you break out the racial component, what you see is that when a black person assaults a white person, they are wildly more likely to go to jail than when a white person assaults a black person, whether it's a fatal assault or a non-fatal assault. It absolutely is the case.
What about the statistics of just how many black people attack white people versus how many white people attack blacks?
Doesn't matter. I'm talking about if
is beyond it's beyond the pale.
It doesn't matter. The fact of the matter is, and frankly, I don't know what those statistics are, so I can't argue them with you. But the fact of the matter is that I do know for a fact that when black people assault white people, they are much more likely to end up in jail than when white people assault black people. And if you're African American, you would know that, John. I mean, this is just a reality in America. Vicky in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Hey, Vicky, thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's up?
Hi, Tom. I've been listening to you for a long time, and I'm glad to talk to you. I heard you earlier talk about drug reactions and the Supreme Court, I guess, decision to say that a company, isn't responsible for a drug reaction. And I just wanted to clarify something I don't agree with that, they should be held responsible to a certain degree. However, in a case like that, I'm a nurse practitioner and I do prescribe medications that could induce such a reaction. And in my education of any drug that I do, which there's many drugs, anywhere from aspirin to antibiotics to, in fact, the highest rate you see in the Stevens-Johnson syndrome is in a drug for gout, and it's allopurinol.
Mm-hmm.
And those drugs... So there's many drugs that can induce...
But that Stevens-Johnson syndrome is listed in the potential side effects for those drugs, right?
Right, and that should have been...
But it was not in this case.
Yeah.
So
and,
the
you know,
prescriber was not informed, and the patient was not informed.
Yeah, that's a lack of...
And the pharmaceutical company knew that this was a side effect of this drug, and they chose not to publish that information. Is that not criminal?
Well, I would have to. I mean, there's information on any medical thing. I looked it up on anti-inflammatories, NSAIDs, and it's all over the place. So
yeah.
I'm not sure why they didn't, you know, confer that information to her.
They didn't because they thought it would hurt sales. It's a for-profit corporation, and their number one goal is to increase profits. The law didn't say that they had to inform her, and so they chose, or her physician, and so they chose not to. Check out the Supreme Court case. Actually, if you go over to TomHartmann.com, look at my interview yesterday with Mike Papantonio. He laid the whole case out in great detail on our TV show. It's on our website. Thanks for the call, Vicki.
You're listening to the Tom Hartmann Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Yep, with the John Roberts Court, increasingly in America, corporations can do any damn thing they want. You and I, not so much. Welcome back to the True People's Media. Talk media for the rest of us, the Tom Hartmann Program. It's Anything Goes Friday. Louise just called, said Higgins, she's back in the boat with Higgins, and he's walking around bumping into walls. He's still stoned from what the vet gave him so that the vet, they could draw blood. And he ate a little bit. They gave him an anti-nausea thing. He ate a little bit, and then she said for 15 minutes he sat in the shower begging for water to be poured on him. So she started the water dribbling, you know, fairly slowly, and for 15 minutes he sat there, you know, lapping away at the water, splashing on his face. My cat is crazy. What can I say? And by the way, when you Google like crazy cat things and you like you go to YouTube and just plug in crazy cat or words to that effect, they're almost always these orange tabbies. What is it? I mean, is it like a gene or something? Which is what Higgins is. He's an orange tabby. And I don't know. It's, you know, it's sort of like, you know, Dobermans or something. They're the Dobermans of cats. Anyhow, Linda in Lorena, Texas. Hey, Linda, what's on your mind?
Hello, you wonderfully intelligent, philosophical, well-rounded person. My 18-year-old cat tells Higgins that he's got many years to go as long as he stays an indoor cat.
I will pass the word along, and he is definitely going to stay an indoor cat.
Yes, that matters a lot. I have several points on the immigration issue. I wanted to address and then a couple of solutions.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, whether that bill passed in the House, which we all know it's doomed to pass,
right,
or they add even more restrictions, I doubt that there are going to be many of the 11 million to qualify and make it under the bill to become a citizen.
I agree. This is more window dressing and a giant welfare program for Arizona and Texas than anything else.
Yes, and Texas used to be such a good state. It's non-affordable in the first place. They can't even afford car insurance if they could get a driver's license here.
Right.
Under the wages that they made, and I'm sure that many of them are going to lose their jobs as soon as they have to be paid decent wages. Many of them probably won't even apply because of that. And they have such a low bar in the bill for felonies and misdemeanors that they are going to be knocked right out of the box right at the beginning, many of them, because of first they get a misdemeanor for entering the country illegally. If they've used a false Social Security, then they're going to get a felony for that. If they've got a DUI or driven without a license or insurance, they've got more criminal charges against them, and so on. They mount up pretty quickly under these circumstances, I think that we may end up with a quarter to a third of those 11 million that might make it.
Maybe. Keep in mind, this is probably a 15, 16, 17 year process because the 13 years doesn't even kick in until a certain level of so-called border security is achieved.
Exactly.
Until a certain number of welfare dollars are delivered to Rick Perry and Jan Brewer. And then on top of that, all these people, they have to work continuously for those 11 or 12 or 13 or 14 or 15 years. And if they go without work, if they're unemployed for any reason whatsoever, including sickness, for more than a certain number of days, my recollection is it's 60 days in the law, then they no longer qualify to be eligible for citizenship, which means that their employers now have, you know, literally the ability to threaten them with loss of potential citizenship as a condition of employment. In other words, okay, you will do this and you will do it for this crummy wage, because if you don't, I'm going to screw up your ability to have citizenship. It's this is handing much more power to the illegal employers.
Right. Well, not to mention that they're going to lose a great number of them are going to lose their jobs as soon as they have to be paid a decent wage anyway.
Right.
I think that they ought to do something more useful with any money that they pay in. For example, double their Social Security tax and have them help fix our Social Security system. That would be a very helpful thing.
Well, I'd like to see the millionaires and billionaires just pay their fair share of Social Security.
Oh, yeah, no kidding.
You know, let's...
And the other thing is, if they don't get any kind of health care relief, what about communicable diseases like the treatment-resistant pneumonia that comes up here from Mexico?
Yep.
The bird swine stuff that comes, the bird flu, things like that. And then my solution is I think that we could have an exchange program and send some of these Republicans down to Mexico and bring the workers up here, especially the ones from Texas.
Okay. Send some of the who down to Mexico?
The Republicans.
Oh!
Especially the ones here.
Somehow I missed that. And we just had a lightning strike outside the window, and I missed that word. Yeah, send the Republicans.
Please, please send some of the Republicans.
Yeah, indeed. You're a cruel woman, Linda. You want to inflict that on Mexico? I mean, that's really, oh my. But I guess you know. You realize I'm saying that facetiously. But thank you for the call, Linda. That's great. Great perspective, Michael in Westerville, Ohio. Hey, Michael.
Hello, Tom. Good to talk to you. Just got back this last Sunday from the Unitarian Universalist General Assembly in Louisville, 3,000-plus delegates from all over the country, and Move to Amend was one of the primary topics that we were involved with, and I just wanted to tell you some exciting news from our perspective, and I hope from our national perspective, and that is because the UUA, that's our association, and several other organizations, including 20 congregations, have endorsed Move to Amend, the UUJEC, which is your friend Marcia and my activities, we proposed an action to the plenary that involved encouraging congregations to join or form affiliates with Move to Amend around the country and to work with other faith communities to do the same and to do that at the grassroots and at the top level.
That is so
and
cool.
It passed. So that means that we are, and I don't know why this wasn't done before, going to start working in faith communities all over the country to move towards democracy. And as you understand, this is not a political prohibited action for nonprofits.
Right.
It's, as David Cobb likes to say, it's a transpartisan activity and is free to be done by anybody. So yep. We're pretty excited about this possibility now, getting started right now.
That is marvelous. Michael, thanks
and
for the update on that.
One additional minor point, major, at the Democracy Convention that's taking place in Madison, Wisconsin in August, we're going to have a special workshop on that to invite people from different faith communities to get involved in this and spread the word.
That is great. Michael, thanks for the update. David Cobb was in town a couple days ago, and we were going to get him on the program, and it just didn't work out. And I'll bet that's what he wanted to share with us. We'll have to bring him in by telephone. He doesn't have to be in town to be a guest on the program. Thanks for the heads up.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Weekend.
Elaine in Albuquerque, New Mexico, listening on KABQ. Hey, Elaine.
Hey, Tom. I just wanted to say, you were talking about earlier on in the program about one of the conservatives who's obsessed with gays. And
yes.
You asked him when you interviewed him, do you
do you think it's possible that you are actually gay? Yes. I asked Paul Cameron
right.
that.
Paul Cameron. And then your point was because you basically said anybody who wakes up in the morning or wakes up constantly thinking about gays has to be gay. And I obviously agree with you. I love you. I'm a progressive and I'm a lesbian. But I think one of the things that does is perpetuate the thing that gays are constantly thinking about sex.
Oh, well, let me, news alert, Elaine. Straight people constantly think about sex. The average amount of time between thoughts about sex among straight people is on the order of 10 or 15 minutes. I've seen the research. The average person thinks about sex about every 10 or 15 minutes, all day long.
But you wouldn't say that you wake up in the morning, or I don't know, maybe you do, constantly thinking about sex.
I think about sex a fair amount. I wake up in the morning, I see Louise. Oh, yeah.
Okay, I get it. I just want to be careful there because, you know, it's an overblown stereotype.
Oh, yeah. No, I was not trying to suggest that gays are hypersexual. I think, if anything, the hypersexuality probably occurs more on the straight end of the spectrum. Or it's just, you know, there's a normal human spectrum of the intensity of sexuality. But look up some of those studies on how, I haven't done this, so I don't know what the result will be, but I'm guessing it will validate what I just said. Plug into the DuckDuckGo search engine or whatever your favorite search engine is. How often do people think about sex? And I think you'll be surprised. And my point was, if people are regularly thinking about sex in the context of their own gender, then they're probably gay.
Well, yeah.
And that's not a bad thing.
I agree with you.
That's just a normal thing.
With these people on the other side. And before I go, just please give my love to Higgins.
Oh, I'll do that. Okay. Elaine, thank you very much for the call. That was a very sweet call. And Shano tells me we just have 20 seconds until the break. So, it would be unfair to bring somebody on. We have a bunch of calls, though. James Clapper, student loans. The Bo Morrison case in Wisconsin. George Zimmerman, student loans. Syrian civil war. And DOMA on the board right now. So, a lot more to talk about after the break. But stick around. We will be back. It is 15 minutes before the hour here on the Tom Hartman Program. Check out our app. By the way, we have a free app over at the App Store for iPhones and iPads. We'll develop one for the other platforms as well. It should be the next thing on the agenda. And, of course, we have our free chat room. And you can make your own message boards, your own blogs, all over at TomHartman.com. It's all free.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Yeah, TomHartman.com. And back with more of your thoughts on the news of the day, my thoughts on the news of the day, my thoughts on your thoughts, and vice versa. Anything goes Friday. Hey, thanks so much to our show director, Louise Hartman, to my executive producer, Sean Taylor, to our associate producers, Shane Farnan and Danielle Gilday, to our video director, Jim Davinsky, to our writer-researcher, researchers Andrew Campbell and Nate Sweet, to Alva Goldbook for video production, to our webmasters, Nigel Peacock and Jamie Holly, to our business manager, Ron Hartenbaum, to all the people at the various companies that syndicate our program, Dial Global, Pacifica Radio, Sirius XM Satellite Radio, CRN Network, Free Speech TV on Dish Network, DirecTV, all the cable providers who carry our show, Comcast, Manhattan Neighborhood Network, all the others around the country, all the great folks at Free Speech TV and RTTV who work on The Big Picture, to our newsletter editor, Sue Nethercutt, the folks in the chat room, hey, to Ellen Ratner and Victoria Jones and everyone at the Talk Radio News Service, to Jay Goodman Tamboli for our tech support, and to our affiliates, our sponsors, and to you for supporting our program. Thank you. It means a lot. You know, when you let our underwriters or our sponsors know that you are listening to the program, when you let our radio stations or television affiliates know that you're watching or listening to the program, it actually makes a big difference. Jack in Brookings, Oregon. Hey, Jack. Thanks for calling. What's up?
Hi, Tom. With this thing with the NSA, National Security Agency director, or whatever he is, James Clapper,
right.
He's on tape lying to Senator Wyden of Oregon about the NSA spying on Americans. A person asked Bernie Sanders this along with another question, and Bernie never got to it. But do you think James Clapper should be held for perjury?
I don't know if he was under oath or not. If he was under oath, then he should be held for perjury. If he was not under oath, I believe it's also illegal to lie to Congress, even when you're not under perjury. But I also think that we should go back and prosecute those five or six tobacco executives who lied to Congress, and we should be prosecuting the oil industry executives who lied to Congress. There's a long train of people who lied to Congress. At least the old mafia bosses back in the 60s had the good graces to say, I invoke my Fifth Amendment. I can't even do a good mafia voice. I'm sorry. But anyhow, I invoke my Fifth Amendment rights to avoid self-incrimination.
Yes, yes, sir. It seems like these people have been getting away with it, and that's one of the reasons a lot of us American people don't believe that much in what Congress is doing.
Mm-hmm.
They aren't holding these people to the same laws that we have to abide by, and I think any time you go before a congressional committee, you better be under oath. I mean, there should be no question about that.
Yeah, I'm with you. Congress is clearly corruptible and clearly has been corrupted, and the original sin is money in politics, and the solution is a constitutional amendment that says that corporations are not people and that money is not speech under the First Amendment. Jack, thanks for the call. Steve in Phoenix, Arizona. Hey, Steve. Student loans?
Tom, just want to say hail to Higgins.
Okay. We'll know in an hour or so what's wrong with him, hopefully, when the blood tests come back, and I'll let you know on Monday.
Oh, I thought the blood test did come back and everything was...
Well, okay. The initial blood test that was like, you know, does he have an infection? Is he dying of cancer or something like all of that? His blood work was normal. So now they're going to look for evidence of kidney disease, and they're looking for the possibility that he's hyperthyroid. So they got to do a thyroid test.
The kidney stuff is tough. We had to put our cat down a year and a half ago on a Friday in December, and we had her from a 1-year-old stray, and she made it to between 19 and 20.
Wow.
She died of kidney failure, so I hope.
Yeah, apparently that's fairly common with these older cats, but we'll see.
Oh, yeah.
We'll see. I'll keep you up to date.
I had asthma, too, and it was really tough dealing with that over the years, too, but got a lot of joy out of her and stuff. But anyways, one other thing. It's going to be pretty darn hot here today. 118 today, 119 tomorrow.
In Phoenix.
So much for global warming, you know.
Right. No, we're hitting heat wave records all over the United States right now, and of course it's happening all over the world. The planet is heating up in ways that
icebergs are melting, and it's just getting outrageous.
Yep.
North Pole. But anyways, these student loans, you know, if this stuff doubles, you know, it's just going to be catastrophic. We're going to see defaults, and I'm right with you. That's going to bring down our economy eventually, very possibly.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm terrified by what's going on here. And the Republicans, they don't care. In fact, they're the big cheerleaders. They want to bring it on, you know.
That's because the banks will make more profit.
For the time, for a while, you know.
Okay.
And then,
I think that this is the next big bubble that's going to burst. I think that at some point in the next couple of years, you're going to see students across the United States say, screw this. College should have been free anyway. Wait a minute. You can go to college for free in most of the developed world, and I'm $100,000 in debt? This is nuts. Screw it. I'm not going to pay it. And when that wave of defaults, when that goes viral enough, and enough people say, okay, I don't care what the bankruptcy law says, you know, because they redid the bankruptcy laws during the Bush administration to say that, yeah, it used to be the only thing that you couldn't declare bankruptcy on was your taxes. Now you can't declare bankruptcy on your taxes or your student loans. And, I think the people are going to defy that law, and they're going to say, you know, to hell with it. I'm not going to have anything to do with it. I'm just not going to pay these student loans. And it's going to bring down the banks.
Oh, yeah. And it's going to have play havoc with the stock market.
Yep.
And I think that's, you know, tenuous as it is. And, you know, I've been paying a little attention to your advice, you know, about getting out of this stuff a little bit. And I've been doing that. And, you know, it's not entirely unwise to have a little bit of a cash position and not be so heavily invested in the market.
Yep.
You know?
Yep. That's my personal opinion. I mean, I of our retirement savings, what they are, probably 70-80% of it is in cash and, you know, or in CDs or, you know, deposit certificates of some kind. And there's a little bit in the stock market, but very, very little. In fact, it's not even really in the market. We got a treasury fund. But I think that we live in dangerous times. And also, you know, get out of the big banks because the big banks are going to go down and move into local credit unions and small local and regional banks. The crash that I see coming, I think, started in 2007. And I think that's why it's going to be so much worse because they've just been holding it off. They never solved the problem. Steve, thanks for the call. And good luck there in Phoenix. Coming up Monday, we'll have the latest news and information from the weekend. And plus, European austerity is a good thing, and America should follow example. Right? Wrong? I'll challenge Matthew Melchiori of the Competitive Enterprise Institute. That and the best of the rest of the news. Right here on the Tom Hartman Program. And don't forget, democracy begins when you show up. Hey, this is so cool. The Unitarian Universalists teaming up with MoveToAmend.org. Check it out. Tag, you're it. See you Monday.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.